I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I am joined by Producer Joel.
Hello.
Producer Joel, standing up.
I am, yeah. It's good.
And you're bouncing around like a boxer, warming up for a fight.
I'm feeling energized.
Are you seeing this as a bit of a fight situation? You versus me?
No, it's us. I think it's us against the world.
It is us against. Oh, yes, correct. I'm your manager then.
You're in my corner.
Yeah. I've got the white towel to chuck in if
you won't need it, mate.
Won't need it.
What I do before I get in the ring is I hide that white towel. I shove it down my shorts.
I'm not going in there. Joel. What's been happening? I've been in the countryside for a week now.
Mm-hmm. Has it changed you?
Have I mentioned this on the podcast that I moved?
I think we mentioned it. Don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're in the countryside.
In the countryside. I did. I remember telling you that my skin cleared up last week. Still clear. Looks good, doesn't it?
Even clearer.
Isn't that mad what pollution does? And on that note, I've just been watching David Attenborough's Netflix film. Did you watch it?
Not yet, no.
Well, for an episode on demand, I'll get you to watch it. Joel, I'm going to say it now. We need to do something.
Me and you?
Me and you.
Oh, God.
We need to do something. The world.
Yeah.
And you know what? He plans it all out. He says what we need to do. It doesn't take that much, Joel.
No?
It's not going to take much. I'm just at the bit where he's talking about fishing.
Are you going to stop?
And if you make some of the sea non-fishing sea, what happens is that area gets loads of fish and that goes into the fishing areas and we get loads of fish anyway. Yeah, and we're producing more fish and, he's got it all planned. He's 90-something.
He is.
Listen to him. He knows. Yeah, anyway, that's what I've got on that.
It's good. It is good. I'm not sure if it's the forum. But
anyway, I'm just planning all my trips to America next year. Gonna go by jumbo jet.
You're gonna drive your big diesel car there.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna get one of those big lorries just because that bit seems fun, doesn't it? Sound like Partridge. That's what I've been watching.
No.
Watch it.
I will.
It's good. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. He's got it all planned out. I think it's gonna be right, Joel.
Good. So yeah, in conclusion, having a nice time in the country.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks, Joel. What have you been doing?
Not a lot.
Oh, guess what I saw in the country today when I was walking? That's going to be my new phrase. In my new phrase, catchphrase. In the country, I was walking along today. I did my morning walk. And I witnessed some real-life detectorists.
Oh, metal detectors. Have you never seen them before?
I saw them in the hit TV show.
Great show.
But no. And I saw one. I went, oh, look at him with his metal detector. And then looked to my right. Oh, there's another one there. And then they swarmed the entire field, just mapping it out. There must have been 15 of them.
They must have got a tip off that there's something good in that field.
I don't know. There's lots of fields around here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, maybe if they're paying, maybe I could, there's a field out the back of here. So maybe we could earn a bit of cash getting them to
go around. But you'd have to take a share of the spoils, right? Because if they pay you 50 quid to look in your field and then they find
sheep in there a while, there are a lot of spoils everywhere, mate.
That's sad. But you'd want to cut, wouldn't you?
If they get some Roman coins or something.
So you've got to keep an eye on them in case they find some Roman coins and just slip them in their pocket.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to get on Amazon and get my own. I'm going to go around with my metal detector. How much do they cost?
I'd love you to start getting into metal detecting.
I'm not against it. That'd be fun.
Well, Rishi Sunak said today that people in the arts need to retrain. So maybe you could become a jobbing metal detector.
Wow, that could be fun, couldn't it?
Yeah.
I could live Instagram it, at Jokes with Mark, anyone interested? And then, but what do you need? You need a spade as well, because you've got to dig stuff up.
Yeah.
How deep do they detect?
I think the more you spend, the bigger range you get, probably.
Yeah,
if you buy, you know, if you buy my first metal detector on Amazon, you'd probably just...
Oh, you're selling it?
Well, yeah, I've upgraded.
Well, a bit of fun, isn't it? Well, we'll keep you posted with that, people. I mean, we've spoken for 5 minutes now.
That's not going anywhere. There's absolutely no... We'll keep you posted, Mark. Like, you're actually about to order a metal detector.
If anyone's got a spare one...
For God's sake.
Tweet me, at Jokes with Mark. I'll send you the address. Send it to me, and I'll get detectoristing.
All right. I'll be good.
And every week I can report what I find.
I will be.
I mean, that is good. That is good podcasting.
Astonished if someone listening to this podcast not only owns a metal detector, but owns a spare one.
Well, like you say, some people upgrade. I don't mind having a lower, like a
hand me down,
like a 2005 edition. So anyway, Joel, we've got to do the podcast. Yes. I've been enjoying chatting up with you.
Buddy, how lonely is it in that cottage?
My mum's here. She just scared the life out of me. Absolutely scared the life out of me. Oh, I just revealed that I'm living with my mum.
I think people can tell.
What? Just in my general demeanour. Yeah. People have felt going, oh, I always assumed that he always lived with his mum. It's only till Christmas. Anyway, so that's what I have to tell
you
her.
You said that. Yeah, exactly. You said that loud enough that she would
so
hear.
Worried. Yeah. Anyway, who have we got this week, Joel?
You didn't say which Christmas.
That's true.
We've got the amazing Alish Mar. Alish.
Alish. She's not sure. She's Alish.
Alice Marshall.
It's Alice Marshall. Character comedian. And that's what we are going to get in and chat about.
You're going to get in character.
Get in character. Here we go. I always have these bits to separate jokes to make it feel like a proper show. Like it all comes around together at the end. But it literally is. All these jokes I've written, what are the best ones? They're in. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no...
Great.
Yeah, that is quite nice. But with your stuff, so yours are all kind of like a set piece show, right?
Yeah. I mean, historically, my shows have been. I've kind of... always previously tried to, because I do character comedy, I've had about sort of 5 or 6 characters that are given kind of 6 to 8 minutes each.
Okay, so there was a mixed... Okay, that's cool. So you...
It's like a variety show.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's always been a kind of a narrative, and I work with videos and multimedia quite a lot to kind of tie it all together. Which initially started out just as a kind of a plaster over a massive crack so that I could go and get changed.
Yeah, cool.
But then actually it kind of, as I first started to work like that, probably five or six years ago, I kind of discovered that actually that's quite a nice little opportunity to include some narrative and to include a different layer that you can kind of create a cohesive show out of, okay. rather than it being pure.
So
variety.
Do you link all the characters together in that sense?
Yeah, yeah. Nice. They're kind of vaguely linked. Although my new show, which was going to be Edinburgh this year, but let's just say next year, is probably the most bitty of anything that I've done. The characters are all much shorter. There's much more kind of clown physical stuff rather than being so.
I really wanted to make a joke about them being physically shorter, but I held off. But I feel like I still need to let everyone know that I thought it.
Go on.
No,
what would you have said?
No, well, I don't know. Just something about height.
He doesn't know.
How do you? I don't know. How do you give the illusion of a smaller height? I don't know.
I'll let you. I tell you what. You think about that, and when you come up with it, let me know, and I'll do it.
So. So every year, do you always create
all new characters, or do you bring the same characters back?
I tend to sort of bring back one or two who've been sort of the most successful from the previous year.
Okay.
Which has worked quite well. And then there was one character that I sort of proved to be the most popular for my first two shows by quite a long way. So my third show was almost exclusively her.
Okay.
She sort of tied the whole thing together. She's a really vicious air stewardess.
Yes, I've seen you do that, yeah.
Which was loads of fun and went really well. But I do, I'm guilty of getting bored quite quickly.
Right, so you wouldn't ever do a show just with her?
No, I don't think
so.
You like
delving in and becoming different people.
Yeah, and you know, I really admire character comics like Colin Holt, who does Anna Mann.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I could watch 4 hours of just Anna Mann. but I just feel like it's kind of it's not the way I write, and also I lack the skill to do that.
No, nonsense. Just because you get bored.
I do get bored. And I think it's coming sort of, I'm one of these sort of horrible actors who kind of like feels like I'm still masquerading in the comedy world, just waiting to get found out. So someone be like, hey, she's an actor. And maybe it's that. It's like you just want to kind of play as many different roles as you can in an hour before someone kicks you off the stage.
But you went from acting, but writing comedically, how did you find that when you first sort of jumped across?
Well, I got my start doing news review at the Canal Cafe Theatre.
Okay.
It's a great show, and I think it's where a lot of comedians get their start. Particularly musical comics and character comics. But it does end up being a kind of a little bridge from acting to comedy for lots of performers. People like Sarah Pascoe and Pippa Evans and Carrie Ad Lloyd all came up through News Review. And it's a 6-week show, two boys, two girls, and you write satirical sketches and songs based on that week's news, and then it runs from Thursday to Sunday. And then you come back in on Monday morning and write a new show for the next week. And then the cast gets recycled every 6 weeks. It's been going for like 40 years. And it is amazing. And you have to work really, really quickly. And you have to write really, really quickly.
So that's nice. So you're thrown in at the deep end then. So that's...
Yeah, well, you are and you aren't. Because it is, the process is really daunting. And I'd written bits and pieces like in uni. And a few kind of like little sketches here and there. But it was, like it is a bit of a brick in the face. Mm. But you've got three other people on stage with you.
Yes.
So that's a nice little safety blanket that you can kind of rely on each other. And, you know, every cast member will do little bits on their own throughout the show. So it's like going on the, it's the nursery slopes of comedy. you get to try it out.
So with the new show, so you've been doing, because you didn't do a show last year. We actually previewed together, didn't we? And you were working in this new show last year, right?
Yeah, I remember at Norden Farm.
That was it. So have you been doing lots of previews ever since then?
Yeah, I kind of previewed in... is it a preview if it's in September, maybe? I don't know. Yeah,
well, if you haven't done the show in Edinburgh, I say yes.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's still a preview. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that was actually really nice to do that without the kind of horrible pressure of having to be ready for August.
Yeah.
Which was quite liberating, actually. And I don't know if you ever get this, but when you're previewing in sort of June, July time, and if you have a bad night or a night that doesn't go as you planned, the panic and the fear is just so rank. You're like, I must fix this now, and you have no idea how to do it. So, but I find myself
So with that preview you did in September, were there any bits that if it was like a couple of weeks before Edinburgh that you'd be panicking about?
Oh yeah, I'm going to say like 60% of it.
That's what this podcast is about.
But because you lack because you don't have that pressure, it's kind of okay. And I feel like you make slightly bolder choices on stage because you know that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And actually by doing that, that is where I personally tend to find nice new ideas. But yeah, it's a mixed bag.
So let's go to that, about that sort of the new show. Are there sections, characters, how many characters did you say there are?
I mean, it's hard to put my finger on it because it, some of them are not even characters. Some of it is just kind of like literally tiny little 20-second segments.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the basis of it, oddly, is a psychological study that was taken of me when I was 3.5, because I was a really, really weird toddler.
Is this true?
This is true. Okay. This is all true. I was observed by a child psychologist for about 12 weeks. Oh. And she would come and like observe me at playgroup and would interview me. And I suppose they're sort of like little mini 3.5-year-old therapy sessions. I don't know. It was all very weird. But the written report that came as a result of it and the interview tapes all still exist.
Oh.
And my mum sort of dug them out that 3 or 4 years ago. And I read this report and was horrified by how weird I was.
What a great concept that is. That's great.
It's nuts, right? So the show is kind of based on the report. Mm. And I use lots of multimedia anyway. So I've kind of edited up the interview tapes, which are equally horrifyingly weird. And all the characters kind of spring from topics and stuff that I discuss as a bizarre 3-year-old.
So are you playing you talking about these tapes you found?
No, I actually play the tapes in the show.
Okay.
So it's all real audio.
But you're you when you do that?
I'm not even on stage when I do that.
Oh, okay.
They're just tiny, tiny little segments of it. It's sort of like 20, 30 seconds.
It. It sounds mad. It's great.
It's mad. But like, so for instance, I talk about, in one of the tapes, I talk about how much I love dressing up. That was just my favourite thing to do ever.
Yeah.
And how I was obsessed with history and the Tudors, apparently, which I was as 3.5. How weird.
That is weird.
And then one of my characters in the show is Henry VIII. So,
okay, so you are Henry VIII in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's all very short and they're all very kind of like tiny pick and mixy little bits. But there's just loads of them, which is really nice, actually. It's a change. Great.
So when, just before we go into the actual material, so comedians are always looking for ideas for their shows and what to base them on. How did that come up again for you to then think that would be great for a show? Did you remember that it had happened?
That's a really good question. I remember always knowing about this report and I always knew it was there and that like something had been wrong with me. I say that I'm doing speech marks in the air. I don't think anything was wrong with me.
Well,
I'm assuming
that's the reveal
peculiar.
At the end, right?
You have to watch it and find out.
That's what I mean. Yeah, so don't give it away.
I won't. And I remember, a couple of years ago, the report came out of a drawer somewhere and I reread it. And I did just think there has to be, I have to do something with this because like I couldn't, the things that I said back then.
Yeah. It's such a nice.
There's no way that I could repeat any of that.
It's such a nice concept to be able to sell as well, like to PR and whatnot. It's interesting. It makes me want to watch it already.
It's interesting as well because there's like nothing remotely political about it. I'm not making any statements about, you know, myself as a woman or the state of the world or current affairs or anything remotely like that. It is just pure like nonsense.
So with the tapes, because sometimes when you say this is real, audiences struggle to sort of believe you sometimes, I think, as a comedian. But like are the audience's reactions like, we 100% believe this is a real thing?
Well, I mean, I hope so, because it is.
Guess what
so,
I mean? So if that, cause sometimes it's hard to make people believe that, even when it is. But I would think that if they actually do believe it and get on board, that's great, because this adds so much more to it if they know it's real.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, you know, even if they didn't, my hope is that the content in the tapes is kind of funny enough on its own that actually, even if they didn't, I think they would still have a good time.
So are they laughing at what you say in the tapes?
Yeah. I've only done one preview so far, which was the night before we went into, not lockdown, but it was,
oh, okay.
It was the 19th of March. So it was like the night before everything stopped.
Oh, so the so what we previewed before, that's all changed, has it, since this came up?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. So
some of the sort of, some of the sketches are the same, but right. The kind of the content and the shape of it is very different, yeah.
Okay, so from this one preview, that's cool. We can talk about that. What bits are you going to work on from that you still need to work on?
I think there's too much video content at the moment.
Okay.
I do. It's probably. So I think it's probably 40, 60. No, the tapes are just audio.
Okay.
But then there are lots of other videos as well. I think it's probably about 60-40 live to video, which is just far too much.
Okay. And did you feel that with the pace of the show?
Yeah, totally, definitely. It also ran at 57 minutes, which is far too long.
Oh, but that's nice, isn't it? That's a nice problem to have.
It's nice to be able to shave stuff off,
I've never, ever, ever had that. It is always, just as we get to Edinburgh, I've just about got enough stuff that I'm really happy with.
What is enough in terms of time for you?
I only want to do 50. Like 50 minutes okay. of one line nice. is plenty. Like I wouldn't want to put anyone through any longer.
I thought you were going to say much less. There's a comedian, I won't name her, but I am a huge, huge, huge fan. And I went to see her show in 2018.
Yeah.
And it was 37 minutes.
In Edinburgh?
And
did you leave disappointed, or were you like...
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Yeah,
I did. Because for me,
yeah.
Any comedian I love, if they finished at 37 minutes, I'd be like, brilliant, perfect. My back aches. I love it.
More time in the bar.
Yeah, well, I never have that of wanting to see any more. You know, if it's a good 37 minutes, I don't think you need any more comedy than that.
Do you not feel that if you've paid like 14 quid?
Okay, yeah, maybe
That's a lot of money.
Maybe
that's a lot of money for 37 minutes.
That's true.
I could do with an extra 10.
Yeah, I'll give him that. Yeah.
I found out that she did actually get in trouble with her venue after about 2 weeks. They were like, look, you've got to add some more.
Was it someone that hadn't done Edinburgh before? As in, like, they didn't really know.
That's a
good question.
Because
sometimes if people come over from the States, they don't really understand how it works over here. Because I remember Sarah Silverman did a show a few years ago, and I remember the report saying she did like 40 or something like that, and everyone was complaining about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
That's probably about 5 years ago, I think. Yeah. Okay.
Ah, cool.
So material wise, what is there any bits you're working on that you can't quite get to work?
In terms of the live material, yes. So, there's one character who I'm convinced is the funniest thing I've ever done, and I'm like, I mean, I
that's
suffer
not a good
from
start. That normally means.
I suffer from crippling anxiety and self-doubt and imposter syndrome as much as the next man, but this character, I'm like, this is fucking amazing. And I've done him three times, twice to absolute genuine grade A bona fide silence.
And was all the other stuff working as well, so it wasn't the gig?
No, I was having a nice time, and then I bring out Simon Forkhand to silence. But then the night I did it before
What's
we all
called?
Went into lockdown, he's called Simon Forkhand.
Forkhand.
Yeah, okay. He's called Simon and he's got a fork for a hand.
Oh, okay, I mean, lovely.
Great. But then I did it again the night of my last preview and it was the best thing of the whole night. Like people were crying with laughter at Simon Forkhand and I was like, yes, I fucking knew it.
So what did you change? Anything?
Nothing. Not a single thing, because I was so convinced that I was a genius. Afterwards, my boyfriend had come to see it and he was like, I know everyone else was laughing. He was like, but holy shit, you cannot do that.
What? Really? Was it dodgy?
Yeah. I think it's like kamikaze comedy. I think people will either love it or genuinely loathe it. And I don't know whether or not I can take that risk. I don't know if I'm bold enough.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, really weird. It's really weird. And I can't put my finger on it because I purposefully felt like
fork.
I'm not. What?
Can't put your fork on it.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thanks.
Technically, it'd be like, what do you call the little bits on forks? The
prongs.
Prongs. You can't put my prong on it.
That's what he'd say. So, I mean, Simon Forkhand doesn't talk.
Oh, doesn't he?
No.
He doesn't talk.
It's ridiculous. It's so mad. Even as I'm saying it to you now, I'm like having an out-of-body experience, looking at myself and listening to myself going, what is wrong with you?
I don't know what you're talking about. Is he dancing? What's he doing?
So he comes out, he's part of a kind of a triptych of knock knock jokes. And the last knock knock joke, the answer to who's there is Simon Forkhand. and there's no Simon Forkhand who, because by the time the audience member has answered that question, Simon Forkhand has appeared in front of them. And when I say that, I mean, I've literally like retracted my hand and pushed out a little fork instead. So it looks like there's a fork coming out of my wrist.
Yeah.
And that's basically it, Mark. I mean, really, there's not a huge amount.
How long does Simon Forkhand take?
Probably 20 seconds.
Well, you could keep that in, even if it doesn't work. That doesn't matter.
I don't know if I can. You're going to have
Who
to see it.
Who says Simon Forkhand?
I do. So I say, knock, knock. Right, let's do it.
Oh, right. Hang on. So I've got you. When you're doing knock, knock, that's you. That's not Simon Forkhand.
Do you want to try it? We'll try it, right? You be the audience, okay?
I feel like we knock, really knock. Do need to see the fork. Who's there?
No. Simon Forkhand. And by that point, by that point, you are so alarmed at what you're seeing that there's no way you're asking Simon Forkhand who. You're just sitting there in stunned silence at what's appeared in front of you.
I think you've got to do that.
He's the one I'm least sure about. I think that's fair to say.
So how do you transition from Simon Forkhand and then back out to you again? Because if it doesn't...
A very hasty blackout.
So if it's complete silence, I mean, that's noticeable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My technician knows.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so what...
The old parachute of a blackout.
So what,
Get me out of there.
Other characters have you done in the past that are just too mad that you've had to drop?
Well, I have been in a sort of Simon Forkhand-ish situation before with a character that I did for 2 years who was called Many Breads. And it was weird.
Many breads.
Yeah, as in multiple baked goods. And I would do her to, again, she came up about after a sort of a thing that I used to do in Lidl to annoy my boyfriend. I don't know if you've ever been into a Lidl, but the bakery section at the back is like plentiful. Oh my God, there are so many different varieties of bread that I had no idea existed. And it all kind of like comes together in this like bread sanctuary in Lidl. And I would just pick up like as many as I could carry and run over to him and go, many breads, I have many breads for you. And he would be like really horrendously embarrassed. And I just thought, that's fucking hilarious. So I got my mum to make me this weird coat, which had lots of hidden pockets in it. And I would attach different kinds of bread and would just like open the coat in my shows like a sort of peg salesman and just show people bread.
Well, go around the audience.
Yeah.
And basically just do exactly as you did with your boyfriend. I have many bread. You want baguette?
You're like, literally that. There ended up being more to it. Slightly more to it. But that was always weird because it would be like either an audience would love her so much and I would get like tweets of people dressing up as Many Breads and people would like send me Many Bread emojis.
It sounds really Mighty Boosh-esque. Like, it's really mad.
Yeah.
That's great.
It was probably more of that ilk than anything else.
So how did that go down?
It would either be the best thing in the show and I'd come off being like, yes, I'm a genius, or it would be to genuine silence and people just would have no idea. Or sometimes even worse, it would be like 49 silent people and one person pissing themselves.
Yeah.
and you just have to, you've got to go with it. You have to go with that.
It's one of those things where eventually you've got to try and get your audience, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
Like, once you've found your audience, everyone would like that. You know, it's hard because I can imagine in Edinburgh, some people are just sort of taking a whip, you know, just, oh, we'll go see this show.
Yeah.
This is a good poster. And then you come out with many bread. And they're like, where's the observational comedy? Like,
yeah, totally. Why aren't you talking about your boyfriend and your period? Like, no. Just many breads.
Okay. So when you came up with the idea for Forkhand, was it linked to Many Bread? Did you think, oh, I really like Many Bread, let's do another one of those? Or was it just a completely...
I think it was a similar method of creation. It didn't happen in Lidl. I think it happened in my kitchen. And I was cleaning the end of a fork with my sleeve, probably quite unhygienically. And as I did, my hand disappeared up into my sleeve and I could just see the fork pointing out of the cuff.
I actually used to do this little YouTube sketch thing with a friend of mine. And we had quite a similar thing where it was I was on screen and we with the video, we changed it so it was like sort of oldie kind of black and white sort of film. And I had a hoodie on with baked bean cans coming out, similar to your sort of fork hands. And then just looking sad. And then the girl that I did the sketches with, she'd come and she'd look at me and then you couldn't see her hands. And then she just revealed tin openers for hands.
That's like, amazing.
Like a love story.
I'm really jealous. I wish I'd come up with that. That's fucking brilliant.
But yeah, it's weird. But again, out of all the videos we released around that time, that was the most mad. And it didn't hit as well. Some people either loved it or they didn't.
Yeah, totally.
Which is that, even like with YouTube, like it's still the same thing, isn't it? You just got to find the people that like what that is. I might try and post that sometime. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe it's a kind of a fashion thing. Maybe the more absurd stuff has come back into...
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Come back into favour.
So have you got any other stuff like that, similar, that didn't work?
So Simon, well, I'm reluctant to say Simon Forkhand's didn't work, period.
I liked it.
It worked. You like it, and seven people at my last preview liked it, so fine. Simon Fork, we're on the fence with the old Forkhand. Who else didn't work? This is something that stems from me being a weird three-year-old. I'm obsessed with Steel Ice Ban. Do you know Steel Ice Ban?
What is it?
Steel Ice Ban, the that famous 60s progressive folk rock group.
No idea.
So their big hit was a song called All Around My Hat, which you'd probably recognise if you heard, shamefully. But I used to fucking love them. As a three-year-old. And I still do. I went to see them with my mum at the Barbican last year and we had a great time. It was me and loads of 80-year-olds. this song, All Around My Hat, is, again, something that I just found inexplicably really amusing. So I was like, why on earth would you write a song? And also, what's around your hat? Surely something, I can see something being on your hat or in your hat, but what's around it? That's weird. So,
that is weird.
I've got a huge like light up, it's like a sort of bus driver's cap, but there's many light bulbs on it and it kind of flashes and goes on and off. And essentially I just come out to that song and then the song stops. And I just open up a discussion with the audience as to what is around the hat. Who knows?
So that is all dependent on what the audience say.
Yeah, totally. Okay. And again, like it's risky. It's a risky little game. But I've been doing that for longer, and it's worked more often than it hasn't. Thankfully, I don't know if that is just like kudos to having nice audiences who are like willing to kind of be playful with it.
So what sort of things have come up?
Quite often we end up discussing the how substantial air is as a thing, as an entity. It's like, does air count? Because yes, it's factually true, but you know, in a sense it's nothingness. And then we've ended up talking about the void and the abyss.
You've got
and
air
the darkness
around
of man's
your hat
heart.
And hair in your hat.
There you go. Depends very much on where you're from. Depends on your colloquial London accent, that one.
And what else? Anything other more inventive than there?
Anything more inventive than air? No, I think I kind of blocked all of it out, really. It's weird. It kind of, because it ends up being a game, it's like a kind of clown game where you, even if you kind of ask something of the audience and you don't receive it back, it kind of doesn't really matter as long as you're being playful and open with it.
Okay.
Sometimes it's not even words, Mark. Sometimes it's just...
I don't know much about clowning.
An experience.
Have you gone and trained as a clown?
Yeah, where I can. I've done sort of like courses and workshops as much as possible because I just absolutely love it. It's terrifying. It's genuinely terrifying, but you learn a lot.
So have you used clowning to sort of help come up with material, or is it always in the moment?
Yeah, almost exclusively.
Okay.
Because I sort of just clown around all the time anyway. So
you see what works, and then if it works, you do it again.
Yeah, totally. Or if you know, you can practice clowning anywhere. You can kind of it will send you sort of slightly mad. But as I've worked in the past on my own
at the moment.
Oh well, you know,
mad anyway.
Mark, that ship has sailed a long time ago. Either you do it with yourself or with a director. Sometimes that can be really helpful, just two of you in a room. It has to be somebody that you really trust and that you think is really funny.
Right.
But it's just being as playful as you can. And if it's you in front of a mirror, sort of making faces and trying to see what works, if you can make yourself laugh, sometimes that's a sort of starting point. And then everything else stems from there. But yeah, you know, sometimes you do come up with brand new stuff on stage.
Yeah. Do you find sometimes that stuff that happens in the moment won't work again? Does that happen?
Yes, totally. So all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. It's a very mysterious thing as to why one thing is funny and one thing isn't sometimes when you're doing something that's not necessarily written material. So it's not a gag with a setup and a punchline. It's just more of a kind of, it's more of an experience. It's more of a game.
Because that sounds so scary to an act like me. Like I need to know. This is what I'm going
to
say.
You need to know where you are.
And that is going to get that laugh. Yeah, consistent. Like, but that's amazing that you can sort of just go on and just create, make stuff happen in the moment like that.
You should go and do 2 weeks clown school. It would make you brave and bold.
Do you think so? Do you think that would help?
Yeah,
that
definitely. Oh my God, I can't think of any performer.
Because is wordplay, you know, sort of looked down upon in clowning? Because it's like you're trying too hard.
Yeah, you'd have to get rid of that. There's a kind of a... I've never trained with Gollier, but I would love to go and do it at some point. A friend of mine has recently got back from doing summer school last year, which is only a couple of weeks. But you still, you know, you learn a lot in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I think one of Gollier's famous phrases is, no one gives a fuck about your shitty idea. So if you get up with an idea or something that's preconceived... he will just immediately be like, sit down, it's crap.
Yeah, that's what
you
I
have
thought.
To just,
yeah.
It's just yourself. It's what's funny about you as a person rather than necessarily what you've constructed to say.
Yeah, that's a complete opposite to me. Maybe I should do it as an experiment.
I think it would help every performer in every discipline. It just makes you a bit more open and a bit braver, I think.
Yeah. Oh no, I heard movement in my flat. It's all good. It's all good. So have you got any other bits you want to talk about that you sort of struggled with over in the past? Have you got things that you've gone back to over the years that you keep trying to make work?
Yeah, I think the very nature of doing stuff that is sort of slightly more clowny and more physical, you inevitably come up against gigs where more stuff doesn't work than does work. Because, like you say, as a kind of a if you're a stand up who is quite sort of heavily based in your script, like you need to know what's going on. You can see your jokes written out in front of you. It becomes like a bit of a, at least on paper anyway, it becomes like a bit of a maths equation.
Yeah.
Whereas I've never worked that way. So if I think about like when I was first starting out and just knew absolutely nothing, I started doing Comedy Virgins in Stockwell. Do you remember that?
Yep, I've never done it, but I know of it.
I think it's where lots of people will go and do their first gig because it's really friendly and everyone's new and there's quite a nice forgiving atmosphere. And I went and did my very, very first character, who was like a sort of relationship guru gone insane, called Greta Medina. And she was like a She was a kind of a cross between Rick Mail in The Young Ones and Diana Rigg in The Avengers. It was really quite alarming and hideous to look at. But I remember going to do that when Tez Ilyas was the MC at Comedy Virgins, and they do a sort of like clapometer thing, and one person goes away with a little shitty trophy.
Ah.
And I won the shitty trophy. And I was like, yes, this must be good. So immediately booked myself onto like 15 gigs for the next week in various kind of like pub basements around London, and fast realised that if I'm going to go and do this weird, slightly surreal throwback 1980s, quite alarming guru character, possibly pub basements full of other quite good comics is not the place for it. And I realized that quite quickly, much to my detriment.
So that first one, do you think that doing well on that first one was important for you to keep trying? Would you have kept going at it if it didn't work the first time?
I think I probably would have gone about it slightly differently. I think because I won one competition on my first gig, I just convinced myself that I was the best person at comedy ever. So I was like, right, well, this is easy. Let's just get out there, man. And then I realised that that's absolutely not the case.
It's interesting because sometimes like those sort of alternative acts compared to sort of your normal sort of regular stand-up can go down really well as a difference to what they've already been watching.
Like, yeah, totally.
And
when that happens, it's amazing.
Imagine opening's tough when the audience don't know what the night is really yet, and then it's madness. Whereas it works quite nicely against regular stand-up, I'd have thought.
Do you know what? I don't know that I've ever in 6 years opened a night ever. I think most most programmers, most bookers, and most MCs know that that will be the case. And I think if anybody had ever asked me to open, I would have politely declined.
So if you do like a regular club gig, do you just stick to one character because of difficulty changing and stuff?
Yeah, totally. So I'll go and do 10 minutes of, like, for example, the air stewardess character.
Yeah, I've only ever seen you do her at gigs that we've done together.
Yeah, so she's probably the most script-based of any of my characters. And probably if you look at the script, it's probably the most traditional in terms of, like, gags. So she does tend to go down the best at club nights. But then I don't do an awful lot of that.
No.
I tend to only really gig in alternative nights or when I'm doing my full show.
Mm.
I think just because I'm so scarred from having tried it 5 years ago and realised that maybe it's not necessarily the place.
Yeah, you've got to be quite thick-skinned, I think, if you're doing something very alternative in those kind of clubby environments.
Yeah, like, definitely. And I think, you know, quite often it just doesn't work. And it's not... I've seen lots of my favourite alternative comedians try and fail at gigs like that.
Mm.
And it's not their fault. It's not the material's fault. It's just not the atmosphere. And if the atmosphere is not right for it, then there's not an awful lot you can do.
Because I've watched so much comedy over the years now, to make me really laugh, it tends to have to be something really alternative.
Because you're just so saturated with it.
I think so, yeah. I've always liked surreal stuff. Like when I started, I was more surreal because that's what I thought was cool. That's what I liked. But then I slowly discovered that isn't actually me. So I sort of just, you know, you just end up where you end up just because it's just a natural sort of route. But what was I going to say? I've absolutely died laughing watching an act like that is dying on stage, but I get it. And I
enjoy... That's very mean, Mark. It's very mean.
No, but I'm not laughing at them dying. Like, it's that the act that I'm enjoying. But
yeah,
because that's the thing. Like, you either get it or you don't, I think, with a lot of these sort of more alternative acts.
Yeah. I mean, there's another sort of famous clown training story, which is that if you're performing, as has happened to me, if you're performing to a room of 100 people and 99 people hate you, but one person loves you, then you've won. That's a win. And you have to see it that way.
yeah, of course. Did that happen? What did that happen at the gig we did? Where was that Kent gig?
Oh, that was, my God.
That was one of the worst things I've ever done.
I'm going to go ahead and say that was that the worst gig I've ever done? Yeah, probably.
So it was in
probably.
Like a...
It's up there.
It was in like a... What do you call it? Like an aeroplane air hanger, wasn't it?
It was in
like
oh my
an
God.
Air hanger, but you could fit I mean, a few. I think you could seat a few thousand in that place.
Easily, I think 10. Easily.
And there were 10 people there.
In a space for 10,000 people, there are 10.
God, it was, that was horrendous.
And it was so difficult to get there. It took so long. I remember showing up just thinking, like, this is, of all, if you could have designed a night that's not for me, it's this one.
I don't even think we've been paid in full yet, have we?
No. And I remember you saying, we kind of got through it. I mean, you did all right, because I think, like, that is the kind of environment where, you know, tight one-liners, regular punchlines, keep them in, packing them in, would actually do all right. Whereas I got up in my fucking costume and I was like, this is so awful.
But at least you could just act and just get through like a scene, you know? Like, whereas with one-liners, you have to wait for a laugh. And then if it doesn't come, it's obvious that's the point that they were meant to laugh. But you could just do a bit, like, which is, you know,
make a thing out of it, yeah, I suppose.
Make it drama.
Yeah, pretend you're not really there. Go to your happy place.
Exactly.
And just think to yourself, in 19 and a half minutes, this will all be over and we can go home.
That's a long time, isn't it?
It was a long old 19 minutes. Holy shit. I can't believe you went back. Yeah. That's masochism.
There's even less people the second time. Because it was a Sunday. I think it was four people and I literally just went to the front barrier bit and we just chatted and I just did a few jokes. But yeah.
I mean, it was set up for a heavy metal gig, which was the act that preceded us.
Oh, yeah.
So that seems like poor booking. That seems like poor planning.
Yeah.
It's like, right, so we'll have Motorhead and then we'll have a clown. Wicked. That sounds great.
Oh, Christ. Let's forget that one.
Forget that ever happened.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alice Marshall!
Yes.
Yes.
Good
podcasting. Hashtag awooga to that podcasting of Alice Marshall. Joel,
Mark.
You used to be a comedian.
No.
Yeah, you did. That's how we met.
What's...
Is it?
Yeah, so about that. I did it for a little bit, for about a year or so.
Yeah.
On the open mic circuit. And it was
in Kent.
Hard. And I never talked about it ever since, but Mark and I would hang out subsequently, and Mark would always introduce me to other comedians and other people as another comedian. And I did so few gigs, and I hadn't at that point.
No.
I mean, when you're doing that when I hadn't done a gig in about 7 years.
I always thought you were really good, Joel. I thought you were excellent.
No, it was too stressful.
Yeah, and anyone listens to this podcast will know you're very witty.
It was too stressful, though.
It is, yeah, well, yeah, you either got it or you ain't, haven't you?
Yeah.
Not easy.
Who's living with their mum? No.
That was, I mean, I was down and you stomped on my head then. It's out of order, mate. Right, hey, where's my phone? I'm going to buy a metal detector. I've had it. That's it. You pushed me over the edge, mate.
Why did you say that?
What I was going to say, why I said it, was I wondered, did you ever consider doing a character?
Oh, good question.
Because we were just talking, because when we came onto the podcast, onto the Zoom, I mean, you lot at home didn't hear this, but I went, West Side, as you came on, just for a laugh, because I'm fun, and I.
Yeah.
And you said you'd just been listening to something with Sacha Baron Cohen. And then he's got Borat, and that's a character, and it's all linked. And I thought, we just had a character comedian on the podcast. Joel, did you ever think of a character?
I didn't. I was always quite intimidated by people that did characters. I thought it was really quite a commitment, especially on the, you know, just on the general open mic scene. It's quite mad, isn't it? Like, fair play.
Loads of props.
Oh, and, yeah. Incredible.
And elaborate costume.
And you've just come from your job as an accountant.
But if you're playing an accountant, that'd be all right.
Easy, really.
Yeah.
But you just, people would just pull up and, you know, they're like Peugeot 307 in their normal work clothes. And then in a pub, and then would, yeah, produce like a balloon animal and a mad hat. And I think it's bad enough just not wearing your normal clothes and having a room of people being different to you. But if you go to all the effort. But then when a character comedian nails it and wins the room over, it's amazing, isn't it?
I think with characters, I think if you're a comedian and you think, oh, I might try doing a character, I don't think your character's going to be very good. I think you've either got it or you haven't.
Yeah,
I think you've got a vision.
Yeah,
of it.
You don't think, do you think? I'm going to think of a character. You just have thought of a character.
You're trying too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Did you do it? Have you ever thought about doing a character?
Nah.
I guess...
That's it. Good chat.
I guess every comedian is sort of doing a character, right?
Yeah, I was more of a character when I started because I didn't want to be me. And then you just gradually find who you are, don't you? But I wouldn't have said it was a character. Didn't have a different name. I thought of lots of character names.
For tax reasons, you're a character though, right? When you perform.
Yep. I thought of a character names quite often.
Go on then.
Mike Drop. And then every time he ends his set with an actual mic drop.
Good. That is good.
Mic drop. I've been mic drop and then drop it.
It's going to cost you a lot on the open mic circuit though, isn't
it? Yeah, too much. So I dropped that idea. Because that's what he does. He has ideas and then he drops them.
Good.
Like that.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, we're talking loads. I'm enjoying it, Joel. anyway, if you've enjoyed the podcast or if you have, well, no, everyone has. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. At Jokes with Mark on all social media. Any feedback, let us know what you think. Go over to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review.
Yes.
That'd be really useful. Help spread the word of the podcast. Give the retweet. Give a little retweet or something like a podcast tweet that I did. I haven't really thought that one through. But just retweet something. Anything. Just be nice. It's nice to retweet. And patreon.com/jokeswithmark. We are. I think we've put
there's new content. Go and find it.
Yes, there is new content. Colin Lego, extra little bonus content, because we focus very much on the pun championships, and then we also did chat quite a little bit about his regular stand-up set that isn't as pun related. Interesting stuff. Good. I've had a great time today, Joel. I'm in great mood in the countryside. It's a nice way of living.
Yeah.
Anything more from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joel. Hashtag Aruga, everybody. Aruga.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.